the DJs were wowed by the banter of the Beatles, the attitude of the Beatles. Then it was a couple of days later, on February the 9th, when the Beatles made their first of three appearances on the Ed Sullivan Show. They did five songs. According to Nielsen, 74 million folks saw the Beatles perform on that first night, and you know the story. The crowd went wild. Maybe you were watching that night, and your dad said, "Wouldn't let those guys in my house unless they had a haircut." That happened all over the country. Maybe you didn't hear about it, or maybe you weren't alive, but you've certainly heard about the Beatles music and heard the Beatles music. We're going to talk about the Beatles tonight. Talk about what happened in 1964 and how the Beatles are still with us in some ways. Thought it might be fun on this 40th anniversary or the week of the 40th anniversary to do that. And when I want to talk about music, I always go to our old friend, count 'em down, Leonard Yates, the man who has been on this station and the old wacky radio, counting down Louisville's top hits. Did that for many years. Is a music aficionado and a longtime Beatle fan from his high school days. Leonard, how are you?
Well, good evening, Joe. Good to be here again. You bring me out in these cold nights, don't you?
Yeah, it is. It is a little cold, but Leonard's got his Beatle wig and his Beatle lunchbox and his Beatle records and his...
Don't believe him. I've got the records, but none of those other things.
His Beatle everything. If he had those, he would probably have a home in the Bahamas now. As much as some of those things are worth. But anyway, Leonard, I really do appreciate you coming in.
Thanks, Joe. Good to be here.
And were you a... Now, you were in high school at the time.
I was in high school. I was a senior in high school, actually.
Now, were you a Beatle fan from the beginning?
I was a Beatle fan, except I had a little reaction against the extreme fandom. And I did the same thing about Elvis. Although I was a little bit young for Elvis when he first came out, but... Anytime something got too big, I stepped back a little bit. But I liked the music. I bought She Loves You, I Want to Hold Your Hand New, a number of the Beatles singles new when they came out. But I used to say my favorite British group in 64 was the Searchers. But it sure ushered in a whole era of music it changed everything, really, as you listen to music. And a lot of people didn't like it. I knew people in high school that did not like that. And then, of course, a lot more accepted it and got into the music, like myself. Right. But there was a group that really didn't like the change in music, but most people did.
Do you remember that night in February in 1964? Were you watching the Ed Sullivan Show?
I was watching, Joe. My youth group at church had gone over to one of the girls' house, and we all sat, about 15 of us, watching that show and just having a ball.
Now, was it a big deal? Did you know the Beatles were going to be on? And, I mean, was that part of the deal? We're all going to go over to... Ellen's house or whatever and watch the Beatles?
It was well promoted. I actually went over to Sharon's house and watched the Beatles, I think. But it was well promoted. I knew about it. I was writing there was a lot of hype for a couple of weeks before. In fact, I was writing the music column for the high school newspaper at the time. And the copy had to be turned in 10 days, 12 days ahead of time. And I sort of had to guess some things occasionally on songs. And I was very happy and very fortunate that I guessed that right. And right at the right time, I had I Want to Hold Your Hand number one. Because that happened very fast, and those songs shot up the charts real fast.
Mm-hmm. Now, before February of 1964, were we playing any Beatles songs on the radio when you turned on Wacky or WKLO?
Well, yes, briefly. Back in the summer of 1963, From Me to You was released, and it really didn't make the national charts. But however, in Louisville, the song made the charts barely. By both Del Shannon and by the Beatles. And Del Shannon's version did make the national top 100. Right. Wasn't a big hit, number 65, 70, somewhere in there. I was a big Del Shannon fan, Joe. I bought the Del Shannon record back in, say, around July, August 1963. And the Beatles record was listed on the KLO survey. It had both the Beatles and Del Shannon on the chart.
So by the time they got here, by the time they landed in New York, were the radio stations playing I Want to Hold Your Hand and She Loves You?
Yes, they were.
And... Was this one of those things that was sort of a created hype, or did people did people seem to love them instantly?
I believe it was an instant love affair. I think America was looking for a diversion. You have to remember it had just been less than 2 months since John F. Kennedy was assassinated,
right.
And it had been a real down couple of months. And all of a sudden, here was this new, lively, fun rock group coming out of England. They looked a little bit different, but still they were kind of cute and kind of fun. And the songs sounded great. They were catchy. A lot of old American rock and roll, as we know, in there, too. But a lot of it was original, too, that John and Paul wrote at that time, for the most part. And people just took to it.
You know, that's the thing that a lot of people don't know about the Beatles, is that the Beatles did, I mean, they loved Little Richard and Chuck Berry, and when the Beatles played concerts, and well, certainly in England and in the United States, I mean, they did a lot of the, you know, a lot of the old rock and roll stuff.
A lot of Chuck Berry, right. They loved the Everly Brothers, Chuck Berry, a lot of the early American rock artists. That's what they grew up on. That and skiffle music in England was big in the late 50s when they were coming along. And, of course, they really learned their trade in Hamburg at Star Club and all at Hamburg in the early 60s and learned to play in the clubs. And some of those clubs were rough over there, but they learned that and learned the hard way. Their apprenticeship was good.
Now, in 1964, am I right about this? There was a week in early 64 when 7 of the top 10 singles were Beatles songs?
I'm thinking it was 5 of the top 10, but yes, there was that. It was around the 1st of April, I believe, of 1964. It was about 5 of the top 10.
Now, you know, we tend to see this a little differently today because the music business is so fragmented. There are more radio stations, and there's CDs, and there's MP3s. And all this kind of stuff, but so many of us were all listening to the same music in 1964. It was very different than it is today, right?
Very different. You had two radio stations in Louisville that accounted for over 70% of the market. You had WAKY and WKLO. Between them, and I'm not sure, I think Wacky was probably on top then. There was a period where WKLO did take the lead for a while, but it was fairly close. And you think over 70%? That's a big number.
Oh, they would... They would get real excited about 70% for two stations.
I mean, if
right?
one had 39% and one had 32%, whatever, it's still pretty good.
Right. That's absolutely huge. Well, we're going to talk more about the Beatles tonight. 571-8484 and 800-444-8484. And Beatle fans, I want to hear from you. We'll get to that. We'll also talk with John Belsky, keep you up to date on the Storm Center forecast, all coming up on 84 WHAS.
Clowning around into an art form.
Okay, that's stretching things a little.
Head home with Terry Miners and Company on 84 WHAS every weekday afternoon.
Having employees means having tons of time-consuming paperwork. Ed Mitchell of Kentuckiana Concrete solved his problem by calling Ahead Human Resources.
In starting our business, the best thing I ever did was getting connected with Ahead Human Resources. The folks over there have solved every problem for me that's ever come up, from payroll to workman's comp to health insurance. They've handled every one of those totally to my satisfaction, saving me tons of time and tons of money.
And when you have a question, Ahead Human Resources is standing by with the answer.
It's a one phone call operation for me. Their expertise has saved my bacon many times. I dial 485-1000, talk to Christy over at Ahead Human Resources. She passes it on, if necessary, to the right professional over there, and my problems go away in a heartbeat.
If you're a business owner, let Ahead Human Resources solve your problems, from payroll to benefits to workers' comp. Call Ahead Human Resources today at 485-1000, 485-1000. Why does a 100-year-old family business change its name?
When it reflects what we really do.
That's Tricia Burke, president of OEC, now Office Environment Company. Tricia?
Office Environment Company offers businesses, large and small, with a complete turnkey operation. We'll not only develop a design that will draw out the most efficient use of your office space, we'll select, recommend, purchase, and install the furniture to complete the space. Once we're finished, we can continue to save you money with our competitively priced and next-day delivery of all your office products.
Tricia, it sounds more like an ongoing relationship instead of just designing space.
Well, that's because it is. You don't stay in business for almost 100 years and not take care of the complete needs of your customers.
Office Environment Company, providing complete office solutions since 1907. Visit them at 1136 West Market Street in downtown Louisville or on the web at oecoffice.com. That's Office Environment Company.
May I help you?
Yeah, it's this cold. My sinuses feel like they're going to explode.
Sudafed, aisle 5.
My allergies have my sinuses all stuffed up.
Sudafed, aisle 5.
Tell the man what's wrong.
My sinuses.
Sudafed, aisle 5.
Sinus misery? Get Sudafed. Nothing stronger at relieving even your worst sinus symptoms. Not even a prescription.
This could just...
Sudafed, aisle 5!
Sudafed. Prescription strength sinus relief. Based on 24-hour dose of pseudoephedrine.
Brought to you by NyQuil. The 9-time sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine.
84 WHAS. Hi, this is Cindy Sullivan. Are you getting all those garden catalogs in the mail and anxious for spring? Well, tune in Saturday morning at 9 and we'll give you the real scoop on all those new and improved plants you keep reading about. Join us for Garden Talk right here on 84 WHAS.
Don't miss a thing. 84 WHAS.
Surprise, looks like we've got some more weather to deal with. Meteorologist John Belsky is watching it in the Wave 3 Storm Center. We're getting some snow, right, John?
Yeah, a little bit of snow. When will it ever end, Joe, huh?
Well, gosh, John, who knows? It's we're already, though, in early February. Like I said, I'm counting the days.
Yeah, well, you know, by the time you get to March 1st, any cold snap, any snow, I mean, is only a day or two. And then you're back to pretty mild weather. And, you know, that's just 3 weeks down the road there. So yeah. We're almost there. And we're going to be cold much of next week. I mean, not bitter cold, but, you know, steady cold. And maybe by the middle and latter part of the following week. So we're talking, you know, 11, 12, 14 days down the road. We may be actually getting back up to near normal or even above normal temperatures. So the pattern may break by then, but still some cold and some snow to deal with before that. So we're not done yet.
All right, so how about this this snow tonight and into tomorrow? Are we going to get much?
Nah, it's pretty light tonight. We got a steady light snow now. This should go much of the night, but it's one of those deals where, I mean, it could snow for hours, and, you know, you may get close to an inch at most. I mean, the flakes are real small, so we're going to go an inch or less for tonight. But there will be some slick spots developing as the temperature drops to the upper 20s. Now, I think we'll dry out for a while tomorrow morning and midday, and then by late afternoon, mid-late afternoon, evening hours, some more of the snow shower activity. And again, another one of these deals where it's an inch or less, but we could see a couple of these heavier snow bursts tomorrow where a few spots actually get as much as 2 inches of snow, and we'll stay upper 20s to near 30 for a high tomorrow. Now, Sunday looks good, upper 30s, partly sunny, another brief chance of snow early Monday, and then late Tuesday or Wednesday, there's another chance of snow. Right now, it doesn't look like a big deal, but it does have some potential. So let's just take it a couple of days at a time here. And the temperature is very key right now. It's 32 at the Louisville International and 31 at Bowman, and you get down to about 29 or so. That's when the moisture in those bridges freezes up. So be alert out there. Probably about, you know, 12, 1 o'clock, we're going to start to see some icy road conditions, especially in those overpasses.
Mm. All right. Well, John, I appreciate the update here.
All right,
we're
Joe.
Talking a little Beatles tonight. Were you a Beatle fan growing up, John?
Oh, yeah. I can remember the Ed Sullivan appearance. I was in third grade, and every single person in the class saw it that night. That was the power of TV, and, you know, it went from there. And, you know, Joe, real quick, I know we're going to get back to your calls here, but, I mean, they were culture, you know, they changed the culture. They were trendsetters. They were really the ones that changed the hairstyles on men. You know, most of the, you know, kids growing up, I mean, I didn't grow my hair long until the Beatles had their hair long. And at one point, on the top 10 on the charts, they had 7 of the top 10 songs, something that's never been repeated since.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, because that's phenomenal. I mean, it's amazing that that would be the case.
Oh, yeah.
John, thanks very much.
All right, Joe.
Appreciate the update. If any weather changes, we'll get plugged in again here. 22 after 10 at 84 WHAS. And we're talking a little Beatles tonight. Leonard Yates is here, 571-8484 and 800-444-8484. And Verizon Wireless users, toll-free, #840. Now, when the Beatles got to New York, they had the press conference. I think they did a concert at Carnegie Hall a little later, but one of the first stops they made was to be on the Ed Sullivan Show. Now, I don't remember. I think I may have been in front of the TV at that time. I can't really say. I don't remember. I was 5 years old. But you have a videotape of that, right?
I have the new DVD collection on that of all 4 of the Beatles appearances on the Ed Sullivan Show. Of course, 3 were the 3 straight weeks in a row in '64. They came back then in September of '65. did a fourth appearance. But the three straight are the ones that are really famous back in 1964. And I do remember being in front of that TV, as I mentioned. And what Ed did, Ed opened and closed the show, basically, near the end of the show. I think he had one act after them on that first show. But that was his pattern, which was a little different than the other artists. I mean, he really plugged the Beatles on these shows. I mean, I remember Elvis being on doing two songs, basically. In other acts, it generally were two songs. But the Beatles did five songs on this show, which was rather unheard of for Ed's show. So, I mean, he was promoting the Beatles heavily on this show.
Now, he didn't talk to them or anything, right? He just had them sing.
It seems like he did greet them. I just watched this all about a month or two ago around Christmas.
And were the kids screaming instantly when
absolutely.
The Beatles were first introduced?
And Ed was really incensed because he would say things like, "You promised you'd be quiet," and then, of course, you know, they weren't going to be quiet. I mean, that was just not going to happen. And of course, the cameras would pan the audience, and you'd see all the young girls primarily screaming. But you even saw some older, in the sense of 20-ish, women occasionally being panned and really getting into this. So it was a rather interesting scene looking at the audience in the show.
So were the Beatles like the teen idols there, or did people past the age of 18 really get into them too?
It's hard to tell in the audience. The audience had a lot of teenagers in it, and that's who the cameras were focusing on.
Well, in terms of the people who were buying, there must have been at least some adults who liked the Beatles because they sold a ton of records.
I would say so from the record sales, yes.
Yeah. Huh. 571-8484 and 800-444-8484, and Verizon Wireless users are toll-free at #840. We're talking about the Beatles tonight. If you have a question, a comment, maybe a favorite Beatle memory, anything along those lines, I'd like to hear what you would have to say tonight. Leonard Yates is with us here on 84 WHAS. So how much of this do you think was orchestrated before the Beatles got to the United States? Because, I mean, there was a huge buildup to this, right?
Big buildup. It seemed like it happened very fast. And I just was looking up some of this information today, kind of researching for the show tonight, and apparently the Beatles management company in this country changed. They got a different promoter just like very first of 1964. You have to remember back in 1963, Beatles contract was owned by EMI Records in England, and their subsidiary in America was Capitol Records. Capitol rejected the first Beatles album, which was called Introducing the Beatles, and the master was sold to VJ Records, an independent label out of Chicago, primarily known for rhythm and blues records. And that was a big controversy then because that album was also released and there were hits off it. That's one of the reasons there were so many Beatles singles. The early stuff was on there that was in England in 62 and 63. All that then subsequently released here at the same time. They rejected it. But suddenly, I Want to Hold Your Hand goes number one around late December 1963 in England. The management company, they get a different promoter in America. They release a little jukebox EP out to jukebox operators promoting the Beatles, and suddenly there's a lot of hype being generated. It all seemed to happen very fast in late December, January of 64, and then suddenly the Beatles are here in early February.
The Beatles are here, and then come an enormous flood of British bands, and the British bands had a real tough time in the United States before January of 1964. Had there not been a Beatles invasion, would there have been a British invasion with the Searchers and the Dave Clark Five and Jerry and the Pacemakers and all those groups?
I would say no. I think the Beatles led it all. They were the trendsetters, and all the other bands were followed. And a lot of them were very good. But without the Beatles, I really don't think that would have happened. Would a few of those bands maybe had some success? Sure, but not in the sense of this wave after wave, artist after artist coming over and being successful. I don't think that would have ever happened.
So what was it about their music, Leonard, that just got people? Was it the image? Was it the music? What was it that, you know, just made it click?
It was extremely well-written pop rock music. It was catchy. It had a harmony. It had a melody. And it had a beat, of course. And it transcended to other musical forms. Within a month or two, you had people like Arthur Fiedler, the Boston Pops, releasing Beatles music done in an orchestra style. I Want to Hold Your Hand was done by the Boston Pops and actually made the top 100 by April of 1964. You had, Aaron Copland, some other arrangers embracing mm-hmm. Beatles music. So suddenly you had some of the hierarchy in music looking at the Beatles and saying, hey, this stuff's pretty good, and we're going to orchestrate it differently and release it too. And that was something that really hadn't happened, not in that sense, not that quickly, to rock music before.
Well, you know, if you look at a song like Yesterday or Something or Fool on the Hill or Here, There, and Everywhere, or, you know, there's just so many songs that I think will stand up forever.
Well, I think they will. I think some of the Beatles catalog will be around just like some of the classical. I think it'll be around pretty much As long as people are around, I think Beatles music will be around.
Now, we're going to hear a real treat. There was a record produced for a group here in Louisville from there was a rock jock from the old WKLO who went on tour with the Beatles, right? This was a little later in there.
This was in 1966 during their tour. It was their last tour, as it turned out, back in 1966. We're talking about Ken Douglas. He was working for WKLO at that time, and Ken was not actually a radio person, but he was an Englishman and was hired by the station.
He was working at a clothing store.
Mm-hmm. And knew a little bit about the music and was kind of into it. And he was hired to do like one-hour show on WKLO. I think it was either 6 to 7, 7 to 8 in the evening, featuring British music. And then WKLO, of course, in the ratings wars with Wacky at that time, it's really a coup. They got Ken on the tour with the Beatles for about 3 or 4 weeks in that tour in 1966. And he would do interviews back on the station live. And there was an album released that year with some of those excerpts. And we'll be hearing some of that a little later.
There was a record that was done. Yeah, we'll talk about that after the news. We're talking about the Beatles, and we're going to your phone calls after this on 84 WHAS. And Coast to Coast AM tonight after midnight on Kentuckiana's 24-hour news, weather, and traffic station. We're 84 WHAS.
It's 10:30. Good evening. I'm Jerry Bloom, News Radio 84 WHAS. President Bush says he wants to figure out why no one's found the weapons that intelligence experts had said were hidden in Iraq. Bush has named a special commission to investigate. It will also review U.S. intelligence on weapons programs in nations such as North Korea and Iran. An official with the Sarasota County, Florida Sheriff's Office says Joseph P. Smith will, quote, pay the ultimate price for what he allegedly did to Carly Brucia. The suspect has been charged in the girl's killing. Police say they found the 11-year-old's body after Smith allegedly told a witness he killed her. Republican State Senator Alice Forgy Kerr has a fundraising advantage over Democrat Ben Chandler in the bid to replace Governor Ernie Fletcher in Congress. A report filed this week with the Federal Election Commission says Kerr raised a little more than $1 million through January 28th. Chandler raised roughly $450,000 by the filing deadline. And viewers have inundated the Federal Communications Commission with more than 200,000 complaints about last weekend's Super Bowl halftime show. The agency says most of the complaints specifically mention the one-second flash of Janet Jackson's breast. The Way 3 Storm Center forecast, light rain and snow falling this evening. The snow becoming likely after midnight with accumulations of about an inch, a low of 27. Currently, we have a little light freezing drizzle falling, 31 degrees at Bowman Field. I'm Jerry Bloom, News Radio 84, WHAS. Depend on it.
The Way 3 Storm Center and the National Weather Service. Trusted and teamed together on News Radio 84, WHAS. Your official weather station.
Hey, Mary, would you like to join me to see the Broadway production of The Producers?
Since when did you have an interest in that, and where did you get tickets?
I've been enjoying the local arts here for years, and if you must know, I won the tickets today at work.
At work? What do you mean? You got tickets through the theater through your company?
Well, my company hosts a Fund for the Arts employee campaign every year. I donate through payroll deduction. There's always a drawing for tickets to art performances, and that's how I won. Plus, being a member gives me added perks as well. The fund gives away some great gifts for being a card-carrying member.
What do you get for donating to the fund?
Gosh, lots of cool stuff. They provide you with incentives for giving levels, discounts on performances, free arts information sent directly to your home, plus much more.
I wonder if my company participates in the fund.
I don't know. Why don't you ask them? Now, what about these tickets to The Producers?
Sure, Bill. I'd love to go.
If you or your company would like to get on board with a Fund for the Arts campaign, call 582-0131. Tell them Bill sent you. Enjoy this program supported by the Fund for the Arts, including the Young Brands Incorporated Family Series, featuring Stage 1, the Louisville Youth Orchestra, and Actors Theater.
Attention, citizens of America. You've heard of the $750,000 found on Saddam. Well, we've chosen to give this money to a good cause. To help car buyers in Kentuckiana by tripling the factory rebate on all new Kias. Only at the Kia store in Clarksville, Radcliffe, and Louisville.
Want a piece of Saddam?
Now's your chance to cash it. The Kia store will triple the factory rebate up to $4,500 on all new Kias in stock. A $1,000 rebate becomes $3,000. Even a $1,500 rebate becomes $4,500. Example, brand new 2003 Kia Spectra. Retail price, $13,050. Less $4,500. Triple factory rebate. Your price, $8,550. Every new Kia is backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty.
Make every mile count.
Get triple factory rebate only at the Kia store. On Lewis and Clark Parkway in Clarksville. In Radcliffe on the Dixie. And on Preston Highway in Louisville. Call 1-866-KIA-STORE.
All supplies last, plus tax, tag, and title. Rebates apply not in conjunction with other offers.
84 WHAS, the morning team.
Hi, buddy, Bob Sikoda here. Join the morning team, 5 to 9 a.m. Monday morning. We'll start the week off right with the latest news, weather, traffic, sports. Of course, Cindy Sullivan will also tell you about Mercy Academy's benefit on Broadway that's coming up. Plus, Paul Rogers looks back at the weekend in sports.
Don't miss a thing. 84 WHAS.
Show on 84 WHAS. Leonard Yates is here. We're talking about the Beatles. Now, that is one of my all-time favorite Beatles records, Leonard.
That's a great tune.
That is a great tune. And, it's, you know, the early Beatles music especially is just infectious. Now, I mean, I like a lot of the later stuff. And in some ways, I like it better. But, boy, that there was just an energy about that.
There was an energy. It was real catchy. Before they got a little more serious, you got in some of the other musical influences, the Indian, the sitar thing, I guess Revolver's about when that started, and then more into the psychedelic era, In a Day in the Life and such, and those songs, they were still great. But there was something about the innocence and catchiness of those early Beatle tunes, first couple of years.
Have a favorite Beatle album?
Probably Help or Revolver, probably. Or probably Rubber Soul, probably. Rubber Soul, probably, of all the Beatles albums.
Oh, man. See, that's a real tough question for me.
I jump around, but then...
Help and Rubber Soul were wonderful. I thought Sgt. Pepper was an outstanding album, too. I really did.
I bought that, I think, the first day it was released, and it was really an experience listening to that. I remember the first time. It was a bit different.
Yep, it was different, but, you know, and that's the ongoing battle. Do people like the early Beatles, the later Beatles, The great thing about that is that we don't really have to pick. I mean, it's fun to pick, but we don't have to pick. We can listen to all this stuff.
We can listen to all of it. What's interesting, though, if you listen to some of these interviews with the Beatles that we're going to do a little bit later, I don't know if we'll catch these tracks. They talk about on those back in the 60s, wanting to improve, wanting to be better, not wanting to be the same. And it really was a goal of the group, and they pulled it off better than most bands.
Kathy, you're on 84 WHAS. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I heard you say a while ago you were wondering if some girls that were older than teenagers were into the Beatles, and I was born in 1960, but I had a young mother who was in her early 20s when the Beatles were out, and that's some of my favorite memories of Mom playing Beatles songs and everybody dancing or going to the drive-in to see the Beatles movies. And I married someone who's a big Beatles fan, so now that's probably part of our favorite time on vacation is listening to Beatles songs in the car, and our 12 and 14-year-olds singing along with everything now.
Isn't it amazing how that music still stands up, and little kids and, you know, and bigger kids still like Beatles music?
Right. I mean, it's really great.
Kathy, thanks very much for the call.
Okay, thanks.
Let's go to Kevin. You're on 84 WHAS.
Hi.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey. I was curious, and perhaps you touched on this earlier with Leonard, but I was wondering what his remembrances are on songs that were covered by other bands that were contemporaries of the Beatles. And I think McCartney probably did more songs. I know, like, Dave Clark 5 had a song called Because, and I believe that was a McCartney song. But I was just kind of curious as to what other songs were covered by other contemporary bands at that time.
Well, other bands at that time tried. And of course, the Beatles gave songs away that they didn't want to record. Billy J. Kramer and the Dakotas covered some in England that were big. Peter and Gordon, some of the ballads they wrote for them. It wasn't, they did not want to really release ballads as singles. That was one of the things in Great Britain at that time. And so many of those ballads, like Michelle, were given away to other artists as for single release back at the time. And I'm trying to think of I didn't remember Because being a McCartney tune.
I don't think
tune.
Because is a McCartney tune.
Oh, I could be wrong there.
But some of the Beatles, like you said, the Peter and Gordon stuff.
Billy J. Kramer and the Dakotas did some Beatles things.
Did Jerry and the Pacemakers cover any of theirs?
I'm trying to think. They were contemporaries, but I don't remember a Jerry and the Pacemakers Beatles thing just off the top of my head.
Okay. All right. Well, I was just curious about that.
Thanks very much for the call, Kevin.
Thank you.
What's your favorite Beatles song?
Oh, who can pick?
That's the best answer, really. Let's go to David. You're on 84WHAS.
Yeah, enjoy your show tonight. Hey,
thanks.
I'm a Beatle nut, and I was young. I think I was 5 years old, but I vaguely remember the Ed Sullivan, just the hoopla about it and everything. But one thing, I'd always heard this, and I think I had read it, so I pulled out all my Beatle books here, and I'm looking through them, and you guys had mentioned about they had 7 in the top 10, which might have been, but even better than that, and I thought, well, maybe I'm wrong on this thing, but it said in April of 64, they actually had the first 5. 1, 2, 3,
maybe
4.
That's what I was thinking. I know they did. I believe that's correct. They had the top 5.
The first 5, and my kids are 15 and 13, they think I'm crazy, and they're like, you know, yeah, right, and I just tell them, I said, you just don't understand, and if you look on the back of the Hollywood Bowl live album, it talks about, you know, you could have put a jet airline into the stadium or into the arena, wherever they were at, and you wouldn't even be able to hear the jet airline because the kids were so loud. And then George Martin's kids, you know, say, hey, Dad, didn't you produce the Beatles or that group called the Beatles? And he said, yeah. And then they say, well, were they as big as the Bay City Rollers?
Wow.
He just ends it and says, well, someday they'll know.
Yeah, someday maybe. So do your kids like the Beatles?
Well, I think I've drowned it so much into them, and when Dad does it, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, right.
But, yeah, can't be cool if Dad does it.
Yeah, but one day they'll figure it out.
David, thanks very much. Let's go to Rod. You're up on 84WHAS.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Leonard. This is Rod with the Wolf Brothers.
How's it going, Rod?
Good.
Hey, Leonard, I wanted to ask you, what do you think of that Let It Be Naked album?
That's out now, I've got that. I kind of liked it from a historical perspective. I'm used to the more produced versions. But I did like it. I enjoyed the contrast between the Phil Spector productions and the bare, sparser production on some of the Beatles' original tracks. So I enjoyed it from a historical perspective. But I guess I'm used to those Phil Spector enhanced productions, though.
Sure. I liked it just from a musician standpoint. You could tell what they were really playing, you know, because it wasn't so produced with the strings. And, you know, one of my favorites is the Long and Winding Road, and it just knocked me out just listening to that.
That was very pretty, just very
good. It was really neat, yeah. Well, I love your show, Joe, and Leonard, you've been a great help to the Wolf Brothers. We sure appreciate
thank you.
You
good hearing from you tonight.
Good hearing from you. Bye-bye now.
Rod, thanks very much for the call. So tell me about this this Ken Douglas thing we're going to hear.
Well, Ken Douglas recorded these tracks for WKLO. Then later that year in 1966, he put together an album that was released limited, I think, I'm trying to think of the exact title. I believe it was called
Ring Around the Pops,
right, it was called. It was released, I think the cover was done in Braille. It was released into a blind audience on a limited basis. Around the country, and I believe they released a series of these albums by different groups. I ran across this some years ago, probably about 25 or so years ago, found this copy, and basically these recap many of the things that Ken had done for WKLO, the reports. And the one we're going to hear first is from August 14th, 1966. It was a show in Cleveland, Ohio, where there was a little mini riot. Now, Ken gets pretty excited about this. Now, the Beatles later on in this interview, or maybe in the next one, say, oh, it wasn't a big deal. Nobody was really trying to hurt us or anything. They just wanted to get to the stage. But Ken's pretty excited about what he sees on August 14th, 1966 in Cleveland.
All right, let's roll it, and we'll come back with more after this on 84WHAS.
I don't wish to blow my own trumpet, but I have sailed in ships around the world. I have boxed as an amateur and had some tough fights. I've driven cars and automobile races. I even saved a man's life in the ocean near New Zealand. But the most frightening experience of my life was in Cleveland, Ohio, when I saw thousands of Beatle fans rushing the stage. And this is how it sounded that night.
This is Ken Douglas reporting. From the Cleveland Stadium, And we've managed to get the Beatles in safely. And I'm sure that whole show's going to stop now. The police couldn't control them. They broke the barriers. And very luckily, we managed to get the boys inside after a tremendous, tremendous riot here. In their seats, the whole place went wild here, broke the barriers, came through the police cordon. We managed to get the Beatles off the stage. They were even all over the stage. Luckily, we can actually say that none of them were hurt. None of the Beatles were hurt. Ringo leapt from the top of the drums into the arms of some of our officials that are traveling with us. And I'm sure that some of the equipment has been broken. We don't know whether they'll carry on with the show or not. They're settling down a little now. They're being told to go back to their seats. I never even expected to see it get calm again. You're still wandering everywhere. The field is beginning to clear. We do hope they're able to keep them under control and nobody else will get hurt.
The show in Cleveland was stopped for about 20 minutes. The crowd finally returned to their seats, and the show resumed.
Here they come, the Beatles again, for a second time to do their concert here at Stephen at Cleveland Stadium. And the crowd are roaring, you can hear them. And I do hope they're able to complete their whole concert. They're under control once more, they're back in their seats. Over the barrier, they will be stopping the whole concert here this evening.
Welcome back. It's the Joe Elliott Show on 84 WHAS. 571-8484 and 800-444-8484. If you would like to join us, Leonard Yates is here, and we're talking about the Beatles. And of course, they came to America some 40 years ago. And I guess their anniversary of the Ed Sullivan Show comes up on Monday. We talked a little about the British invasion. Had there not been a Beatles, there might not have been a British invasion. But I wonder if you would talk a little bit about what happened when the British invasion got here. A lot of the Americans who had been on the rock and roll charts just disappeared. The British invasion just overwhelmed the Billboard charts for a couple of years, didn't it?
It certainly did, and actually it caused some great music to be written. I think most people consider those years, 64, 65, 66, to be the best years for single records ever, because you can go way down the charts and find great records, because there were still some great American records being produced that just weren't, of course, getting the top 10. Maybe they make the top 30 or 40, but they were great records. It did. For a while, there were sometimes well over half of the top 20 would be British artists. That wasn't unusual. All the way through 65 into 1966. It took a long time for it to come back in balance a little bit. Of course, British acts still were big. There were more of them, but especially 64, 5, and 6. Great number of British acts on the charts. We got everybody from the Dave Clark 5. Then, of course, you got that second wave in there with the Animals, and a little later on the Rolling Stones in 1964. You kept getting waves into the 60s. You've got them in 1965 with Van Morrison. Just one act after another seemed to come on under the charts from Great Britain.
The Ed Sullivan Show had the Beatles on three times, or it was, what, three times in a three-week period?
3 weeks in a row. Another unheard-of thing. They came back again in September of 1965, but they were on February 9th, February 16th, and February 23rd of 1964.
And between time, they played, they had a concert at Carnegie Hall, and they also went to Miami Beach and spent a week. Of course, Ed Sullivan did his show for Miami.
That second week,
right?
That was the February 16th show, the one with, I believe, had Mitzi Gaynor on it and all.
Was that was not the original plan, was it? To bring them on three times in a row?
Now, then I can't answer that question. I didn't research that. I don't remember that, but I'm not so sure it wasn't. But it was. I have a feeling maybe it was. I wouldn't imagine they'd change things that much, but again, they could have. It was such a big impact.
But, I mean, it was huge. I don't know. I have not seen the research on this. I know that 74 million people watched it the first night on the Ed Sullivan Show, but it apparently continued to build, and the record sales just got stronger and stronger through the spring.
Oh, they did. In fact, you go into stores like the Five and Dimes at that time, Woolworths and places, and you would see stacks of Beatles albums. And, of course, at that time, the 45, especially in pop music, especially for teenagers, was still number one. 45s outsold albums. And I can remember being a little bit taken aback by this. that you'd go into the stores and there would just be a rack of Introducing the Beatles and a rack of Meet the Beatles albums, just 50 copies in a row in a bin. I mean, this was like, wait a minute, they hardly do this for 45s. And, of course, there were a lot of 45s, too. This was unheard of to see that many rock albums because, again, singles outsold albums big time in rock and roll at that time.
What did the adults in your life think about this whole Beatle phenomenon, Leonard, back in 1964?
Well, my parents didn't really care for it, but they were fairly tolerant a little bit by then, I guess, but they didn't really like it. They weren't trying to keep the music out or anything, but obviously it was not something they liked. Even earlier in the 60s, I remember my parents did not care for some of the older songs being redone, even. I mean, they didn't care for the Platters redoing old songs and such, or doo-wop groups take older songs and things. So they really didn't care for the Beatles too much, but they took it pretty good naturedly. Looking back on it, I guess I didn't think so at the time, but they weren't really that terrible. They didn't like it, but they were tolerant, I guess.
I think that's the thing from so many people. They apparently were, their parents were sort of tolerant. My recollection of this and reading about this is that the adults just kind of smiled as, well, this is a fad that's going to soon go away. But, of course, the Beatles, and we have just a minute or so here before a break, but they're still selling big records. That Beatles 1 album a couple of years
went
ago.
Number one.
Right? They have more DVDs that have been released and things, and they're still selling a lot, right?
They're still selling a ton, but now keep in mind, the Beatles, in terms of the chart position books from 1955 on, the Beatles are the number one group. They're not the number one artist, though.
Number one singles artist would be Elvis.
As Elvis. On the album charts, they're number three, but they're still the number one group.
Really? Now, who would be...
That'd be a good trivia question, wouldn't it?
We
know number one is still Elvis.
Elvis, right.
Mm-hmm.
And so number two would be who? That's a great question.
The most famous crooner of the modern era, perhaps?
Frank
Sinatra.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Outsold the Beatles.
On albums. That's
on
chart
albums.
Positions, yeah.
Yeah.
Chart position-wise.
No. Interesting. And I remember Frank Sinatra saying that he thought Something was one of the best songs ever written. So maybe he was a Beatle fan in some way. Who knows?
I'd say probably was, to a certain degree, especially later on.
Yeah. Well, we should dig out Bing Crosby's version of Hey Jude. There's an absolute classic.
We are going to spare the audience that, aren't we?
I think we are, but folks, take my word for it. It really did happen. 571-8484-800-444-8484. Lots more to get to in the next hour of the show. Leonard Yates is here on 84 WHAS. Kentucky Lottery information is coming up in just a couple of minutes. What happened to those weapons of mass destruction? You can make your voice count online at WHAS.com. Some rain or snow this evening with an inch or less expected in the Kentuckiana area. The temperature is critical, and right now it is at 30 in Louisville from your official weather station, 84 WHAS. The Joe Elliott Show here on 84 WHAS. 7 minutes after 11 o'clock, you and I together until midnight tonight. And we're talking about the Beatles in this portion of the show. Leonard Yates is here. The Beatles, of course, came to America 40 years ago. That would be early February of 1964. And their music is still with us in many, many ways today. I wonder, Leonard, if you would talk about the albums and the singles that were released. And it's very different today than it was then. The albums came out the single certainly came out almost one right after another. And really, compared to what we hear from major artists, the albums did too. Now, you have some people who, a major artist will release an album every 3 or 4 years.
That's right. It takes a long time. And the Beatles albums, part of that, of course, happened because the Beatles had some material for about a year and a half that was already available in England. Also, the fact that another company owned the rights to the Introducing the Beatles album. So what you had is back in early February, you had the Meet the Beatles album on Capitol was released, goes to number one. You have Introducing the Beatles, released by VJ, which has the 62-63 material. It goes to number two on the charts, stayed right under Meet the Beatles. So they had the top two albums for a number of weeks. Then MGM picks up the rights to some stuff with Tony Sheridan and the Beatles back when they were in Hamburg. That album gets on the charts. VJ releases the Beatles with Frank Ifield, another British artist they have, and combines it and gets another album on the chart. In April, Capitol releases a second Beatles album, And remember, they were taking tracks off the British albums. They were cutting them down. The British albums, I believe, had 14 tracks at that time. American albums had 12 tracks. So Capitol was able to get some extra albums into the American market. So the second album comes out in April on Capitol. There's a documentary album with Ed Rudy that's released in June. Then in July comes the Hard Day's Night soundtrack album. And the first movie, of course, is out that summer. The Something New album comes out in August, just basically less than a month after that. Put a different cover on it, call it Songs and Pictures with the Beatles, which is fairly collectible. Same album again, it's really introducing the Beatles album. It charts again in October of 64. Then Capitol releases a documentary album called The Beatles Story, which charts in December of 64. And by January of 65, the next regular Beatles album, Beatles 65, comes out. So all that happens in less than a year.
Wow, that is pretty amazing. So the Beatles, when did they start working on this movie? I mean, A Hard Day's Night was, if it had Beatles attached to it, it was going to be huge.
Actually, I'm thinking that was actually in the works. They were working, I think, in December, late 63, early 64. I think even before they was started, I think even before then, if not right after they were here, it was early on. That movie was already planned before the big American push.
As much as I like the music, Leonard, I got to tell you, the Beatles movies just didn't do it for me. Are you a Beatles movie fan?
Not particularly. I mean, they were okay, but kind of remind me of some Elvis movies. They were okay. The Hard Day's Night's funny, and it's entertaining. Help, I thought, got rather a little bit drab going through that. But then you just had to see the Dave Clark movie to realize how good the Beatles movies were in comparison, but really they weren't great movies.
Yeah. Boy, that's something. So they were working on A Hard Day's Night, and then they had the Something New album. Now that's what Things We Said Today and Slow Down and all that
right,
stuff.
Right, Slow
was,
Down. Mm-hmm.
Was on that album. And Beatles 65 was, well, of course, they were all huge. All those albums were huge. Now, the Beatles really started changing, later in 65, right?
Late 65.
The sound
mm-hmm.
started changing, and tell me about that.
Well, I think the sound began. They just matured. They wanted to change their sound a little bit. They were experimenting with different instruments. Some of the interesting interviews back in that period, they say, we don't think we're that good of musicians live. We like what we do in the studio better. We're frustrated, really, because we can't recreate in live concerts this sound on stage. And really, acts couldn't at that time. The technology in the studio was far better than the live technology in the 1960s. It was later on in the 60s and 70s that the technology allowed that you could pretty much do the same thing live that you could do.
Right.
In fact, I can remember a Four Seasons concert about 1967 when they had Come on, Marianne out, that it actually could, you saw the walls of speakers and you knew they were using some tape and some things to get some of the sound effects that you just figured they weren't doing it live. There was some extra help with it. It took late 60s before some of that technology came about. They were frustrated. They wanted to evolve this music. They wanted to go in different directions, and basically they did. And of course, individually, they each brought George became a more involved in the writing for the group and the songs, and there was a lot of pressure there because he wanted to have some of his songs included. Of course, John and Paul had been doing most of the writing. That was an area Ringo really never got into. So you had three of them really wanting to write songs.
Now, there was an incident in 1966 where John Lennon said something that the closest thing I can think of would be the Dixie Chicks thing that happened late last year.
Right. John said something to the effect that the Beatles were bigger than Jesus. And it was in a long interview, I believe, that he'd given. It was not meant to be derogatory. It was really meant to be, this probably shouldn't be this way. And I believe that's really the way it was meant to be, and that's the way it was explained. However, of course, this was front page news in 1966, and you had Beatle record burnings. You had protest. You saw many ministers getting up and condemning the Beatles and, as being satanic and all this. You just had all kinds of things break out of this this comment. And there's some comments in this press conference are trying to calm some of that down. They didn't know how they were going to be received at this point in time. So it ended up not hurting their career, of course, but it did cause some problems and a lot of concern back in the summer of 1966.
And back from that old, what was called the Ring Around the Pops album that was released by this clothing store employee turned DJ because he had a British accent. And hey, if you had an English accent, you had to be cool.
You did.
In the 1960s. Ken Douglas was at the Beatles press conference.
This
there
is in Chicago, I believe.
Beatle tour, right? And this would be 66.
Early August, I believe, was 66.
This would be their. Was this their last trip to the United States?
This ended up being their last trip. In fact, they're asked somewhere in this series of interviews that Ken does about coming back, and I think John says somewhere in the interviews, not on this one, but, oh, well, we do this about every summer, so I assume we'll be back next year. But, of course, they never were. But there were also those comments about being frustrated by not being able to get the sound in the concerts that they like. That comment also comes out, and this was their last American tour.
Well, let's hear part of this press conference recorded by Ken Douglas. We go back to early August 1966 in Chicago as John Lennon and the Beatles talk about this whole controversy about him saying they were greater than Jesus. Right here on 84 WHAS.
As you remember, before the Beatles arrived in America this summer, there was quite a controversy over a statement about religion. John Lennon told his side of the story.
And we've been hearing a great deal of interpretations of your comment regarding Beatles being Jesus. Could you tell us what you really meant by that statement?
I'll try and tell you. I was sort of deploring the attitude. The thing, I wasn't saying whatever they were saying, I was saying anyway. That's the main thing about it. And I was just talking to a reporter, but she also happens to be a friend of mine and the rest of us at home. It was a sort of in-depth series she was doing. And so I wasn't really thinking in terms of PR or translating what I was saying. It was going on for a couple of hours, and I just said it as just to cover the subject, you know. And that's, and it really meant what, you know, I didn't mean it the way he said it. That's the main thing. It's just so complicated. It's gone out of hand, you know. But I just meant it as that the Beatles, I wasn't saying the Beatles are better than Jesus or God or Christianity. I was using the name Beatles because I can use them easier. And I was using, you know, because I can talk about Beatles as a separate thing and use them as an example, especially to a close friend. But I could have said TV or cinema or anything else that's popular, or motor cars are bigger than Jesus. But I just said Beatles because, you know, that's the easiest one for me. I just never thought of repercussions. I never really thought of it. I wasn't even thinking, even though I knew she was interviewing me, that she was going to, you know, it meant anything.
What's your reaction to the repercussions?
Well, when I first heard it, I thought, it can't be true. It's just one of those things like bad eggs in Adelaide and things. And then when I realised it was serious, I was worried stiff. You know, because I knew sort of how it'd go on. And the more the things that get said about it, and all those miserable-looking pictures of me looking like a cynic and that, and they'd go on and on and on, it'd get out of hand, and I couldn't control it, you know. I can't answer for it when it gets that big, because it's nothing to do with me then. I think that only from what my views are, from what I've read or observed of Christianity and what it was, and what it has been or what it could be, it just seems to me to be shrinking. I'm not knocking it or saying it's bad. I'm just saying it seems to be shrinking and losing contact.
And we all deplore the fact that it is, you know.
Nothing better seems to be replacing it, so we're not saying anything about that.
You know, and if you say something that you think may vaguely in a way be helpful, you know, because, I mean, you know, if it is on the decline in any way, then to say it's on the decline must be helpful.
It's really going on saying, yes, it's all fine, and yeah, we're all Christians, and we're all doing this, and we're all not doing it.
And, you know, there'll probably be a big resurgence of Christianity now. Might as well, yes.
Mr. Lennon, are you all Christians?
Well, we were brought up, I don't profess to be a practicing Christian, although I think Christ was what he was, and anybody who says anything great about him, I believe, but I'm not a practicing Christian like I was brought up to be. I don't have un-Christian thoughts.
It's 18 after 11 from 84 WHAS. I can still remember that as a little kid. In fact, I had a tough time getting talking my mom and dad into buying the Sgt. Pepper album, which was later, but... You know, that Beatles greater than Jesus thing, it was
big news in '66.
Big news. Did you have, were your friends talking about there were Beatle bonfires and all that kind of stuff?
I remember seeing not much around here. I think I heard about one or two, but you saw the news clippings on it and saw it on TV, and it was like, oh, come on, this is way out of proportion. I mean, I thought it was way out of proportion. I was very involved in church work and youth group work and things. I thought, this has been taken so far out of context. I had trouble believing it back in 1966.
But the music, while they did have a bump in the road there, the music certainly, mm-hmm. certainly went on. Well, we're back to talk more at 571-8484 or 800-444-8484. If you'd like to join us, we're talking Beatles on 84 WHAS.
When you read it, it's history. When you hear it, it's news. Around the clock, depend on News Radio 84 WHAS for in-depth team coverage.
I am Rick Pitino. Since I first started coaching basketball, I've always liked to be prepared and know the game plan. That's why I like to know what my phone bill will be every month, not guess what my charges will be for every call, every feature, and whether a call is local or long distance. With the Z-Line Home Unlimited plan from Zetel, you'll receive both unlimited local calling and unlimited long distance on one bill for one low price. So I always know what I've been charged every month. Now you can talk as long as you like, anytime you like, and never have to pay per minute charges again. I can call friends in Frankfurt, or I can call my family in New York for just $49.99. The Z-Line Home Unlimited plan combines unlimited local calling and unlimited long distance with all the popular calling features like voicemail, caller ID, call waiting, and more. Call Zetel at 1-877-323-SAVE. Call 1-877-323-SAVE.
Taxes, fees, and other surcharges are not included in plan price and vary state to state. Other plans available. Offers available in select states. Call Zetel for details.
Make heads turn, show your style.
Making plans for the weekend?
It's all inside.
Get to the JCPenney two-day sale. This Friday and Saturday, save 20 to 50% store-wide. Get savings for your whole family, like our entire stock of athletic shoes from Nike, Reebok, and more. Plus, don't miss our store-wide winter clearance. Save 75% on original prices when you take an extra 50% off clearance prices. Hurry in to the JCPenney two-day sale this Friday and Saturday.
It's all inside.
JCPenney. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This weekend only at AutoZone. Get a free gallon of Peak All-Weather Windshield Washer Fluid when you buy a pair of wiper blades. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Get in the zone. AutoZone.
84 WHAS.
This is Cindy Sullivan. Are you getting all those garden catalogs in the mail and anxious for spring? Well, tune in Saturday morning at 9 and we'll give you the real scoop on all those new and improved plants you keep reading about. Join us for Garden Talk right here on 84 WHAS.
Don't miss a thing. 84 WHAS.
We'll check the Wave 3 Storm Center forecast here on 84 WHAS. It looks like we're perhaps getting a little snow in the Kentuckiana area, and that this could continue with some light snow and about an inch accumulation, maybe a little less in the Louisville area tonight. John says an overnight low of around 27 for overnight tonight. For tomorrow, we're looking for maybe another accumulation of snow. Could be up to 2 inches in some areas, although John doesn't expect that we will have anything close to that in much of the Louisville area, and then warming up to around 39 with partly sunny skies on Sunday. So this snow isn't going to be with us long, whatever is left, but there will be some slick conditions and maybe some icy patches as we continue to go here after midnight, so be careful if you're driving. Right now, it's 32 in Louisville from your official weather station, 84 WHAS. We're talking a little Beatles tonight. Leonard Yates, of course, is here. We've been talking about some of the great Beatles music. And, you know, I asked you earlier about a favorite Beatles album. It's hard for me to pick. It's hard for me to pick. It's impossible to pick a favorite Beatles song. But when we start charting these things, what was tell me about the most popular Beatles song?
Well, that's what we're going to do in just a second. Do we want to give it away? Do we want to lead it? Back when I was doing my show at Wacky back in late 1983, we did a repeat of a countdown that was done by Wacky in 1969 of your favorite 30 Beatles songs. Well, I think the soundtrack of the 60s was running that afternoon. They'd done a special Beatles show that afternoon, too, and we tied my show into that night and played back the Wacky list. And, of course, it happened to be the biggest Beatles single of all time based on the charts. I think 9 weeks at number one was the number one voted song by the listeners at that time. And actually, Joe, it's one of my least favorite Beatles songs. I'm a big Beatles fan, but I never got this. I thought it was one of the worst records they ever did. It just was repetitive and boring to me.
Yeah, it was okay.
And,
I agree with you.
And I don't know if anybody has a thought about that or not, but this little bit takes you from where the number two song was. I'm introducing the number one song, teasing it just a little bit. I think you get to hear maybe a wacky jingle in here. You get to hear the number one jingle, I think, in this.
All right.
From an old wacky show I did back in 83, and that, maybe they can think about what that number one song was by the Beatles, the most popular, and maybe they have one they didn't like either, but it wasn't my favorite.
Well, let's roll the tape from Leonard Yates in his days as the wacky DJ.
4th Street Countdown.
4th Street Countdown back in 1983.
Well, at 8:25, we've just about made it to the top. There was the number two song that was not on the soundtrack of the 60s list. Number four national hit in 68, Lady Madonna. Before that, yesterday, number three on the wacky list in 69. Number one on the soundtrack of the 60s list today is, well, we reached that pinnacle. The number one song, yes, it was on the soundtrack of the 60s list. Yes, we've already heard the flip side. It was the record just after Lady Madonna to be released by the Beatles in 1968, the longest Beatles single ever. You got it?
79 Wacky Radio, number one.
Hey, Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better.
It's a song apparently written for John Lennon's son, right?
Mm-hmm, that's the one.
Hey Jude, the top Beatles, and there's the top Beatles song for both wacky listeners and...
No, I think that yesterday was on the soundtrack of the 60s list, but it was on the wacky list in 1969. It is their biggest charted single, 9 weeks at number one. Beat out, I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Well, let's take a call here. How about Tony? Thanks for joining us. You're on 84 WHAS.
Yeah, I'm a big Beatles fanatic myself. My favorite one was John Lennon. I was just wondering, y'all was talking about that bad publicity they got back in 66. Well, did they get a lot of bad publicity about that White Album? Because I heard they got a lot of bad publicity about that one. And I'll hang up and listen to the outcome, huh?
Well, Tony, I thank you very much for the call. They were really getting into a little bit of, they were scaring a few people by that time, Leonard.
Oh, they were a little bit. Yeah, it was different. There were a lot of different things on that album.
Yeah, that album was, you talk about really stretching their wings, and I know a lot of people really didn't like it, thought it was a little too psychedelic or whatever. I think the White Album still stands up pretty good.
I like the White Album. It's not my favorite, but I still like a lot of the tunes on it. I thought maybe it got, maybe there was too much on it a little bit, if you want to just make it relative to some other things, but I still liked a lot of the tunes on the album, and... but like I said, it was a lot of Beatles on that, a lot of different kind of cuts.
Well, I mean, something like number nine, I never got that.
I didn't get that either.
The sitar stuff, I could, you know.
But there had been some other Beatle controversies about that time, too. That was kind of at the height, near the height of the Paul is Dead thing back in the late 1960s there. That there was a lot of press about that. And so in the Beatles, the talk of breakup, of relationship problems with the Beatles, they were getting some press that wasn't quite as positive. They weren't touring anymore. They'd stopped touring. And people wanted them to tour again. So people were unhappy about that. So things weren't, you know, weren't quite as rosy as they were in 64, 65, but still very popular. I mean,
let's talk to Steve. You're on 84 WHAS.
How's it going?
Good Steve.
Good show tonight.
Thanks.
Just to comment on the Free Comp songs you had there, they were all pretty much McCartney songs, and so many people give John the credit for being really the creative force behind it, but really a lot of the big songs and even some of the big contributions on the albums were really by Paul, so that's just my take on it.
So you think you like McCartney's stuff better than Lennon's?
Well, I don't know that that's true, but I think they both had their place, and that's what made them such good partners. They each brought something a little different to it.
Well, it was always fun watching.
I always found it amazing that, I wonder what the agreement was that they shared equally the credits for writing when they sometimes one didn't really contribute to the other. And that really had to be an amazing partnership.
I know there was some tension between the two of them about that, too, wasn't there, Leonard?
I believe there was tension, but basically they had been childhood friends, and they pretty much accepted that, and they accepted that there were some differences, but it seemed to work, and so they kept it that way. You used to have fun, like on these Ed Sullivan shows, and you watched, a lot of times they provide tapes to Dick Clark, other shows later after they stopped touring, they provide film clips of their songs. You always watched to see who was singing lead, because that's who you figured wrote the song. Who was on, you know, if you watched who sang lead, That was who wrote that one.
I remember John saying in an interview that, they did make each other's work better.
Well, I think they did. And they did, there's a note in some of these interviews that they did call each other occasionally. A lot of things were written separately. Occasionally somebody would write the music and the lyrics, but usually it was mostly one with some input on certain things from the other.
Remember John talking about Help, which is, I think, a great song, and he had originally written it to be a very slow ballad. And Paul got a hold of it and said, "Well, you know, let's not do that." I mean, so there's a lot of stories like that.
There are in the Beatles.
This whole thing about Paul is dead is kind of fascinating. We will play a little bit of the Paul is Dead documentary. We'll go back to 1969 and hear that. And take more of your calls. 571-8484 is our telephone number. Leonard H. is here, and we're talking Beatles on 84 WHAS. We're talking Beatles tonight. All things Beatles. Leonard Yates is here. 571-8484 and 800-444-8484. Let's go back to the phone and say hi to Jay. You're on the air.
Hey, Joe, Leonard. How y'all doing tonight?
Good, Jay. How are you?
I want Leonard to settle a controversy that's been brewing in my mind for years.
Uh-oh.
In 1966, I picked up a Hit Parader or a 16 magazine, and the Beatles itinerary for that summer had Louisville, Kentucky on there. And later on, when it didn't happen, I ran into Tim Tyler. And he said the ferry board nixed the whole thing. Can you tell me the true story about that whole thing? They were scheduled to be here at one time.
I don't know the true story. I have heard that same story, though. Now, that's, of course, Tim Tyler was promoted. Tim Tyler was a wacky DJ, very well known in the market at that time, and Tim produced a lot of shows. He brought the Beach Boys to town, Four Seasons, a number of acts. So he was well connected at that time and certainly had the clout to perhaps bring the Beatles here. But I heard that story. I heard about it at the time it was talked about. But as far as being able to say, I actually could say 100% sure, no, I couldn't.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
Several years ago, you had this British guy on there who wrote a book about bluegrass. And the Beatles were mentioned. And this guy said the Beatles' contribution to music was negligible. Do you remember that?
You know, I do remember that.
And
I sure
thought,
do.
What is this guy talking about? And he even kind of dismissed Patsy Cline as a no talent. Now, but where's this guy coming from? And I wanted to get in the show that night and argue with him, but I couldn't get in that night.
You know, I'm trying to think if it was a bluegrass or country music or something. I think it was country music that he was talking about. And yeah, he wasn't a big fan of Patsy Cline, because I talked about how much I love Patsy Cline. Well, you know, he didn't like Patsy Cline, and really didn't think the Beatles made much of a contribution. I thought, what is this guy smoking?
Right, that's exactly what I thought. So where's this guy coming from, you know? And it seems like people from England never did appreciate the Beatles as much as the people around the rest of the world. And enjoy your show tonight.
AJ, I appreciate the call. That's an interesting thought. Were the Beatles bigger in the United States than they were in Britain?
Boy, that's a real good question. I would say they certainly were as big, I looked at the British charts just recently again, and I have to say they certainly were as big. Maybe I'd say that's a fair statement. They could have been a little bigger even in England. I mean, in America than in England, but still they were awfully big in England too.
I think the Beatles did come to Cincinnati.
Indianapolis.
I know they did come to Indianapolis. I have to tell my obligatory Beatles story here. I did. It's one of the. One of the few great concerts I did get a chance to see when I was just a kid, like first grade, I did get a chance to see the Beatles. I believe it was August of 64, maybe in October of 64. It was somewhere in late 64 in Indianapolis. And we got some tickets, and I don't remember very much about it, frankly, but it was the old Fairgrounds Coliseum, held about 9,000 people. I remember they had a 4:30 and a 9:30 show. And we went to the 4:30 show, and the thing I remember most about it, Leonard, which won't surprise you, is the absolute screaming, the pandemonium when the Beatles came on, and they had several acts with them. But I remember going into the Coliseum, there was almost a stampede because there was a rumor that was buzzing throughout the crowd somehow that George Harrison was doing some work inside the Coliseum, and people were just pushing each other to try to get in to maybe catch a glimpse of George. That was pretty huge. May have been a diversionary tactic. Who knows?
It could have been, because they did use diversionary tactics at that time.
So what's the deal on Paul is Dead? That was a big controversy, which, you know, if our friends at Coast to Coast AM had been around at In the time of 1969, they would have absolutely done a show on this.
This was talked about and talked about. And, of course, there were a whole bunch of clues from album things to pictures on albums like Sgt. Pepper, where Paul's turned with his back to you. And there were all kinds of musical clues. And this show, the Wacky put together a documentary on this that we're going to hear the introduction from in a minute. We may have time to catch a little more. It just depends. I mean, it's elaborate. I mean, I can't even go into how complicated it gets where you played songs backwards, where you listened to this clue in this song, you looked at this album cover, you read this word in the liner notes. I mean, it was incredibly complex, and you could almost start believing, except you sit there and say, no, there's no way. I mean, and Paul's appearance had changed, of course, a great deal. He lost a little bit of that baby face. He had the beard. He'd matured a little bit. He got in his later 20s, and his appearance had changed, but it was Paul. I mean, it was obviously Paul, and I thought it was kind of silly at the time. And yet you kept getting all these clues, and you'd said, well, wait a minute, you know, I don't believe this, but you kept hearing these clues that made you think, well, there's maybe a little plausibility to this.
You know, I remember this, and I still don't know how it actually got started. I'm not sure anybody really knows how it got started, but it's one of those things where people put a little piece of this and a little piece of that together. What are we actually going to hear on this tape?
You're going to hear, basically from the same show, just a little bit later. You're going to hear the end of Hey Jude coming off that bit on the number one song. You're going to hear the introduction from a 1969 documentary that Wacky produced. We played it in its entirety on this show. It was the feature. I did the countdown, then a feature. Well, the countdown was done with number one, so this became the feature for that night show in October of 83. And the documentary was produced in 1969, and it eventually goes into all these different clues, and it's really elaborate. If we have time, it'd be fun. But you'll hear how important, if you listen to the start of this documentary, just how important this has made to sound.
Well, let's give it a listen. We go back to actually the introduction that Leonard had done from the old Wacky days of 1983 for this 1969 documentary. You'll hear both. You'll hear both some of Leonard's introduction and then the 1969 documentary. We'll roll a little bit of this. I do want you to get the flavor of it here on 84 WHAS.
Well, I wonder how many of our crowd out at Christie's this evening won some money on that, perhaps, or maybe looking at it negatively, lost some money on that. Hey Jude, the number one Beatles song on our Wacky All-Time Beatle list back in 1969, and oh, what a song. And in fact, as often happens, that was the most recent Beatles single that had been released just prior to the tabulation of this poll back in January, February of 1969. And it was the number one song. Of course, one of their biggest hits of all times. As we are just about ready for our feature tonight on Is Paul McCartney Really Dead? And of course, this was originally aired on Wacky back in 1969. And I think you'll find this, I think you'll find it interesting. Paul had just at that time, the reason all these rumors got started, I mentioned earlier, he was been rather reclusive, and his appearance began to change a lot. Back around 1968-69, he'd broken off his engagement to Jane Asher, a longtime girlfriend of Paul's, and suddenly he married Linda Eastman. In fact, I saw an interesting picture looking through an old book today of Linda interviewing Paul back in 1967 as a reporter before, you know, they'd met socially or really dated or anything. It was kind of a fascinating picture to see them together before that time. So now we'll take you back to 1969, and our documentary first aired back in 69, Is Paul McCartney Really Dead? But first, we're Wacky, the station for music and fun, WAKY Louisville.
There's a lot of random in our songs, writing, thinking, letting others think a bit, then bang, you have the jigsaw puzzle. That was a direct quote from Paul McCartney. Past several weeks, the eyes of many have left the troubles of the world to unscramble what may be the most fantastic hoax ever conceived by man. Is Paul McCartney really dead? opinion of WAKY's management that it is our responsibility to present this special program. The Beatle mystery has caused a tremendous furor among people of all ages. But to suppress this information would be to ignore our obligation to the general public we serve. Responsible broadcasters throughout the nation are coming forth to present the facts and report the results of this terrifically complicated and involved investigation. WAKY is not convinced that Paul McCartney is dead or even ill. In fact, we believe him to be alive. But the question, why did the Beatles start this mystery, must be answered. It is to this end that this program is being aired.
It is 13 before 12 midnight on 84 WHAS. We're talking Beatles and we're talking to Lisa. Thanks for joining us. Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Lisa.
I have an interesting story about the Beatles. I met a gal about 15 or 20 years ago who was from London, and she was the wife of a friend of my husband's, and naturally my first question was, oh my gosh, did you ever get to meet the Beatles? And she told a neat story about her friends always going to the Cavern, I think it was called, to listen to like Jerry and the Pacemakers and things, and it was a regular Friday night ritual. And one night they asked if she was going. She said, I don't think so. She said, who's playing? They said, some group called the Beatles. And they all went, said, nah, we've not heard of them or anything. So they didn't go. And she went home and her parents asked why they didn't go. And she said, oh, some group's there, the Beatles. We never heard of them or anything. And her mother said, well, that, don't you know, I don't know their names. But anyway, Mr. and Mrs. McCartney. And she said, yeah. She said, well, their son is in that band, Paul. They were his godparents, supposedly.
Really?
And she said, oh, well, maybe we'll go hear him next time. You know, it's just another group. And then within months, the world knew the Beatles. And she never did get to see him in person and lived over there and knew his family and everything. I thought that was pretty neat.
That is a pretty neat story.
I know, because I kept saying, oh, my gosh, didn't you try to go? And she said they really didn't ever, by the time that she knew about them, they didn't come back there. They weren't popular, and the world had them. And she never did get to meet him.
And never did, but that's a great, so her parents were,
I believe she said that they were his godparents.
Wow.
Or maybe her mom or her dad was one, but they obviously knew them. So, small world.
Small world is right. Lisa, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
571-8484. We got a lot of ground to cover here. Let me just catch up on a few things. The Beatles broke up, actually, what, early 1969?
I was thinking it was more like early 1970 when they actually broke up. Talk about it, and there was some rumor, but I believe that they recorded the one album, then went back to the other album, and there were Beatles songs. I guess it was in 69.
What did they actually do, the Let It Be album?
Gosh, I'm trying to remember, Joe. I'm trying to think. That was done back in 69, wasn't it?
Yeah, that had been... Yeah, maybe that's right. I mean, that had been in the can for a while. But apparently the... Which I guess, you know, they were all very successful. And they were just sort of wanting to go different ways, right?
They were. And they just kind of grown out of it at that point in time. Their relationships had changed. Their music had changed a little bit. And they were really wanting to get on with their lives in a little different way.
Yoko gets blamed for the breakup by a lot of people. Is that fair?
I don't think it's totally fair. I think, yes, she had an influence on that, but I think that the seeds of that were already started, the differences in music, the wanting to be different, just being tired after it being so popular and together for so many years. I think there was a need for change, and she probably was a bit of a catalyst there, but I can't say she was the total cause or the only cause.
Did you like them individually? Did you like their music individually?
I did. I liked, I still enjoyed a lot of the music individually. I thought it was fascinating Ringo was able to come out and have some solo hits, of course, not to the musical extent of what John did or Paul. And of course, George was always a little bit the hidden talent. Of course, that came out more and more in the Beatles over the years. And George was an excellent songwriter, too, and musician. And I think that really showed up in the solo career.
You know, I would agree with that. I don't want to diss Ringo, but I'm not sure that you'd really say that Ringo was in the same league as John, Paul, and George. Is that unfair?
I don't think that's unfair, no.
John and Paul, I think, maybe better together, but certainly, you know, John wrote some great stuff, and Paul cranked out hits for years with Wings and, you know, his solo stuff, and very melodic stuff. I think, you know, it, it, it's hard to beat them even separately, I think, Leonard.
Oh, no, they were great artists, both individually and separately. You'd ask about, I did a little checking here for you real quick. Let It Be was recorded in late January of 1969.
Yeah, I thought that was about right. And then, after that was done, they were essentially, the band was essentially done, was mm-hmm. it not?
Pretty much at the time. I think when they recorded the other album, I'm thinking they wanted to go back, and they didn't want that to be the last thing they recorded. And they went back and recorded the one other album at that time. That's what I'm trying to think. Yeah, I guess it was about time of Abbey Road. I was thinking that they then recorded Abbey Road after Let It Be is what I was thinking. Even though it was released the other way around, they released Abbey Road first. But I believe that they didn't want to actually be the Let It be the last thing they recorded together. They went back then and did Abbey Road, which was released first.
Now, when they did go solo, all the band members had some early hits. George Harrison got in a controversy with the Chiffons about their two big hits, My Sweet Lord for George and He's So Fine. What was the deal with all
that? The deal with that was it was written by, I think Ronnie Mack wrote the Chiffons hit, of course, was about early 1963, and then My Sweet Lord came out in 1970, and I did not hear the similarity being that much. Maybe a little bit in the chorus, but not really more than a lot of songs were similar back at that time, much more similar than this one. There were no lawsuits involved. This one was, the suit was successful on this back later in the 1970s, and it cost George a lot of money, and the songwriting royalties went to the writer of He's So Fine. I believe it was Ronnie Mack that wrote that song. It was pretty controversial in the music business at that time. And somebody who'd followed pop music for a long time, it didn't seem quite right to me, because I'd heard, to me, songs that were closer sounding, that were never questioned or sued over. And there were some obvious ones, like a couple of the Beach Boys covers of Chuck Berry that they immediately gave up the rights back to.
Sure.
They were obvious. But there were plenty of others that had some similarities that were never sued. And this one didn't seem as close as how that suit came out to me personally, just listening to it.
And George had that, it's a huge album, All Things Must Pass, and really we didn't hear that much more from him after that. I mean, he had a few hits. John Lennon, of course, we know what happened to him. The Double Fantasy album came out, and then, of course, the tragic shooting
when John went through a period, he kind of retired from music, right. And then was making the big covers, ready to come back right at the time he was shot and killed, unfortunately. He was really wanting to get back into music again. Of course, Paul was a prolific one. And Paul just kept working with Wings and really seemed to enjoy being out there and doing the music.
And is Paul still recording?
Mm-hmm. I believe so. There was an album, Mike, last year that I recall, at least in the last year or so, and he still makes some appearances on some of the shows around.
Hmm. Let's try to grab one or two more here before we totally run out of time. Doug, you're up on 84 WHAS. Hey, Doug.
To comment on the lawsuit, I had read an interview with John Lennon regarding that, and someone had asked him what he thought about it, and his comment was to the point but kind of evasive. He said something, and I'm paraphrasing, well, look, you know, George knew what he was doing, and he's a big boy, and you know, he's paying the price, and it's a paraphrase, but it was kind of obvious that John was saying, agreed that it was a bit plagiarized, and it was something to the effect of, look, you know, George knew what he was doing, and he got caught. But when I heard it, I thought it was very similar, because I paid attention to it when the lawsuit controversy was going around, and I agreed it was very similar to me, and apparently so did John Lennon.
Hmm. Doug, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
One of the things that one of the stories that John Lennon refers to in his Playboy interview, which would have been just so bizarre, is that, remember that Saturday Night Live thing where they say, we're offering the Beatles $3,000 to get back together? And apparently Lennon and McCartney this was at a time when Paul was visiting New York. They really weren't super close at that point, but Paul was visiting New York, and they were watching in John's apartment there, and they toyed with the idea of going down there, just showing up. Now, would that have been a great scene?
That would have been a great show and a great scene. Because I think, looking back on it now, and that was one of the other tragic side effects of John's death. I mean, it was tragic. But the whole standing, the point that people wanted the Beatles to get back together. People wanted to see the Beatles again. And once John had been killed, that could never happen again. That was one of the sidelines. That wasn't the main thing. But it was one of the sidelights of that whole thing, that it was like the end of an era, because people wanted that to happen, and now it just couldn't happen.
So have we mined the vaults here? Do we have all the Beatles stuff that's ever been recorded, or is there more to come?
I've not heard of any more. They released those anthologies, a lot of the British Broadcasting things they did several years ago. I'm not aware of too much in the can of the Beatles.
I think we're pretty much done, although what they'll do is they'll continue to repackage stuff.
Absolutely.
That'll be the thing. We've got to find a way to get you to buy more. Leonard, this has been fun talking about the Beatles.
I enjoyed
Thanks
it, Joe.
Very much. Leonard Yates has been here talking Beatles tonight on 84 WHAS. We're here for the Sunday morning talk show. Do some open line conversation between 8:30 and noon. And we've got the lawyers from the Louisville Bar Association coming in here Monday night. We'll also talk about how to get the most from eBay. How to buy low and sell high. All that coming up on the Monday night edition of the Joe Elliott Show. George Norrie is next with Coast to Coast AM on 84 WHAS. Good night.
Find out about the problem before you're in it. Rely on News Radio 84 WHAS for Skywatch 84 traffic reports.
Deep in the heart of Belgium lies a pristine valley. A valley sheltered from the winds of change. A valley unscarred by the wheels of progress. And in this lush green valley is a spring. A spring that has run for hundreds and thousands of years. A spring that is cold and clean and pure. The Belgians call this spring Vézelay. And they put the water from the spring in a pretentious looking bottle. And of course, they charge an arm and a leg for it.
You know, Meyer brand water comes from a spring too. And it's cold and clean and pure. But it comes without the pretentious bottle and the pretentious price tag. The Meyer brand. The only difference you'll notice is the price. Meyer. Higher standards, lower prices.
Meyer brand products taste as good and cost less than national brands. As part of this year's 70th anniversary celebration, get even greater savings on Meyer brand soft drinks, salty snacks, and canned vegetables. Meyer. Higher standards, lower prices.
Your new home for Kenny G, Sade, David Sanborn, and all your smooth jazz favorites is the new Smooth Jazz 93.1 and 101.7.
No withdrawals, no craving, no nothing. It was absolutely wonderful.
Stop smoking forever or lose weight and keep it off with the help of internationally acclaimed hypnotherapist John Morgan.
I just eat what I should eat, and then when I'm done eating, I'm done.
I'm not quite sure what the effect was, but I know the effect was tremendous.
I just don't smoke. I don't know any other way to explain it.
I was able to immediately change my eating habits.
By popular demand, John Morgan will be here soon. Smoking cessation is at 6 p.m., weight loss at 8 p.m. Call 800-735-6907 to reserve your space.
All I know is I have willpower now.
I just want to thank him for helping me save my life.
John Morgan will be at the Executive West Hotel, Watterson Expressway at the Fairgrounds, Tuesday, February 24th. Call 800-735-6907. The sessions are affordable at $49.95. Dateline NBC reports that hypnotherapy is the best choice for permanent results.
It's just amazing.
This has been absolutely amazing.
You would be so grateful you did it for yourself.
Cindy Sullivan. Are you getting all those garden catalogs in the mail and anxious for spring? Well, tune in Saturday morning at 9 and we'll give you the real scoop on all those new and improved plants you keep reading about. Join us for Garden Talk right here on 84 WHAS.
Don't miss a thing.
Clear Channel. This is Kentucky Anna's 24-hour news, weather, and traffic station.
84 WHAS.
In-depth team coverage starts now.
Good morning, 12 o'clock at News Radio 84 WHAS. I'm Joe Hall. President Bush on Friday announcing the formation of a commission looking at intelligence regarding Iraq prior to the war. Here's ABC's Ann Compton.
The president is willing to put Democrats, even partisan ones, on his investigation, but not to give Congress any hand in running it. The White House knows some Hill leaders will now discount the value of the panel's conclusions.
That's ABC's Ann Compton. Bush appointed 7 members of the panel on Friday. Bush says he wants to figure out why inspectors haven't found the weapons that intelligence experts had said Iraq was hiding. John Kerry, virtually unchallenged in 3 weekend elections, is heading south. Kerry has left Michigan for a weekend of campaigning in Virginia and Tennessee. He's hoping to deliver knockout blows to his 2 southern rivals, John Edwards and Wesley Clark. A bill filed in Frankfurt on Friday would prevent gasoline prices gouging during an emergency. News Radio 84's Chris Chandler has more.
This proposal would make it a crime to raise gas prices more than 10% during a declared local or national emergency or during a code red terror alert.
True price gouging occurs when people are dependent upon these items, and retailers take advantage of the emergency.
Kentucky Attorney General Greg Stumbo says his office can't do much about day-to-day price fluctuations like the sudden spike in prices earlier this week, but he says merchants shouldn't be able to take advantage of a crisis like some did on September 11, 2001. This bill would make the first gouging offense a misdemeanor, the second a felony.